Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Dr. Linda Bender. Thanks for being with us today, Linda.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Linda, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what inspired you on a path to helping animals.
Oh, thank you. I would love to. Well, I was asked once after a lecture I had given about that very thing, when did you first start connecting with animals, Linda? And I actually could not, I thought for a minute, and I couldn't remember. You know, there was no epiphany. But I thought about it for a long time, and I thought back to my, when I was just a very young girl in my parents' backyard, and I distinctly remember rescuing. It was the middle of the night, and we went outside. There was screaming, non-human screaming, and in the dark was shivering and quivering a tiny little bunny, and I brought that bunny inside, saying, I'm going to save this bunny and stay with it all night. And what happened in that experience of holding that baby bunny in my chest so that the bunny and I could share heartbeats and breathing, there was an immense overwhelming surrender to a love and a recognition of a love that was beyond the bunny, beyond me, and represented something very, very much bigger that was running the universe as I knew it. And it was an overwhelming experience of the oneness of all life. So animals invited me into their world to understand the greater meaning and purpose that we are all here together.
Right.
And it never left me.
You know, I identified with something from your book, which relates to the story you just told, which is animals come into our lives when we need them to come into our lives.
Yes.
And my cat, Parker, has reconnected me with the universe on a number of occasions as well. Something that I found really interesting in your book was what we think of as extrasensory perception in animals. It's not something supernatural. It's just something that animals seem to possess. Can you describe, for example, the homing instinct that animals have, how they can find their human companions after a family has moved to another state? What is that GPS they have there?
I love talking about this because it's so fascinating. And first of all, the intuitive psychic abilities, as we call them, animals, are not paranormal. They're normal. You know, they're not exceptional. They are the norm. It's just that we have divorced ourselves as humans from tapping into it. And also, though, even our dogs and cats and in wildlife, they have intuitive abilities that we humans have, but in humans, they tend to be more latent. So they're more alive and awake. You know, animals live in the present. Mm-hmm. We as humans don't, but we can tap back into it. But for example, and I give lots of examples in the book of animals being able to find their owners, we still don't know, as smart as we think we are, we do not know how pigeons home. We simply don't know. We know it exists. How they do it, we cannot explain. I mean, in veterinary medicine, we know cats purr. We know a lot about purring. We actually don't know the mechanics of a cat's purr, and yet we do know that the cat's purr elevates our immune system, you know, astonishingly. So there's much we know, but there's much we also don't know and cannot, and science cannot explain. But my point is, it doesn't mean it isn't happening and that it isn't real. And in my veterinary experiences, I find it unusual when owners don't have a story about an unexplained connection with them and their animals. It's actually the opposite, that it's quite common, but people aren't talking about it.
And what are some of the stories that stand out to you? And I know you talk about several of them in your book that really speak to that uncanny ability to do something that perhaps many of us are capable of, but they are just able to tune in and tune out a lot of the fuzz in our world and find their way home.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as I mentioned in the book, you know, an animal's intelligence and love for their human companions, devotion and love is what serves as sort of the GPS. You know, it's that love bond, that love connection that inspires so much of it. That's why your dog is sitting there when you come home, you know, because what tests have shown is there are very clever tests, and Rupert Sheldrake and people like that, and also Russell Targ with humans, we've shown that although we can't explain it, you know, we've edited out, we've controlled the events that say, well, the dog is sitting at the door because, well, you heard the car come, you know, it's similar time every day. No. We've controlled out those things, and it still happens. But one of my favorites, I mean, it just sums it all up, is a story, one story in my book about Prince, the dog that was living in London during World War One, and the owner was home and was then called to go fight in France on the front lines. And after he left, the dog became extraordinarily depressed, refused to eat, and suddenly disappeared. And the wife was frantic. She searched everywhere, could not find that dog. And finally, she sent a letter to her husband in France saying, I'm so sorry to tell you that Prince just disappeared. And she heard back from her husband in return post that not to worry, Prince was with him on the front lines. This dog had somehow managed to make his way from London to the coast, find his way across the English Channel, and find his master among 500,000 soldiers on a battlefield with exploding shells.
Wow. It's unbelievable.
And it's true. That is a true story. Sums it up.
There was another story similar in the book about a dog that boarded a boat to Japan to find his owner.
Oh, yes. Now, and that's true. It was documented. That dog missed the boat, but managed to find others that would lead him back to his obviously beloved owner. Yes, these are true stories. Now, granted, this doesn't, you know, occur 100% of the time. We know that. But it does happen, and it happens more frequently than we sometimes believe. You know, and one thing I always say, and it isn't true of only dogs and cats, but in specifically dogs and cats, they have the same neurotransmitters we do, the same neurohormones in the same parts of our brain. So why should they not feel the full spectrum of emotions that we humans feel and respond accordingly? And I think that has a lot to do with what we see so much of now on the internet and all of these animals helping other animals, interspecies adoptions, all of these things, yes, that are coming up. And we're learning. We're learning the wisdom of animals.
Well, that's the beauty of the iPhone and everyone having a camera with them wherever they go. I know just the other day there was a hippo that saved a baby zebra who was drowning in a lake. And, you know, it seems like every week there's a new story about an animal helping another animal.
I rest my case. It's not the exception. It's the norm. But we as humans have not paid attention to it. And since we have falsely claimed dominion over all other forms of life in the last, I guess it's evolved over the last few hundred years, you know, that didn't always exist. But we have claimed dominion, so we're now being, you know, continuously shot down as the superior species on the planet, because we're not, you know, we're really not. We are one of many.
Well, you know, there used to be a number of different ways that we claimed our superiority, and they've all been pretty much dismissed, from a tool use. We thought, well, the apes are pretty closely related to us, so it's not too surprising that apes use tools. But then we found out that crows were even better at using tools. I want to go back for a second to our story about the GPS, ESP. It's more than just stories. You described some experiments that were done where an owner took his dog to various locations around town and then let him out, and he found his way back.
Yes.
It's more than just stories. There's some scientific proof to some of these things.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I mean when I say we've controlled out the explanations that just say, oh, it isn't true, it's coincidence or habit or, you know, a superior smell. No, so you can say that that does happen, but if your dog can smell where you are, smell his way home within a mile or whatever you say, well, okay, let's control for that. Let's put the dog in a taxi cab and take him 10 miles away and track him beyond, you know, any reasonable doubt of using smell as the reason. Well, and it's done. You know, he makes it. He does it. And there was one case where the dog went to his owner's family members one by one, stopping at their homes and on routes the dog never took before. Absolutely, yes, there is science to it. Yeah.
There's also the predictive ability of animals to predict tsunamis and earthquakes. And you tell one interesting story in the book about a city, I believe it was in China, that was evacuated. Can you describe that for our listeners?
Well, and again, we have trouble. We really can't explain how they do it because it does, again, go beyond the sensing abilities. And you know, we look back at the tsunamis and we can't explain, but very few animals were killed. You know, they went up to the high ground. They escaped. Not one species. Most species were gone. There was an interesting, speaking of science, there was an interesting thing that happened not too long ago in Italy. There was, a very scientific Oxford team of researchers, and they were researching the mating habits of a particular frog in Italy. So they were already observing these animals and clearly had recorded their daily habits. Well, one day they disappeared. They completely disappeared. No one could explain it. Well, soon after that, there was a major earthquake. And so they had the data. They had the pre-data. And then afterward, after the earthquake, the frogs came back and picked up again the habits they were originally doing. So here you have this, you know, highly esteemed Oxford researcher saying, this is what happened. These frogs somehow knew what was going to happen. They disappeared.
Wow.
So it's fascinating. Can we explain it? No, but we know that it happens.
One of the things that struck me in your book was talking about how renewing our communication with animals is the most powerful way to reestablish a loving and meaningful relationship with the real world. And I thought that was really interesting to think about so many. And then I started thinking about so many of my friends and family and people who had experiences. And this, it isn't the rule, but I think a lot of the people that I know that had experiences with animals, either at a young age or now as adults, just see the world in a different way. They have a greater appreciation for other animals, not just their companion animals, but they have they think, you know, more about some of them have led them more on a path towards faith, or also just a greater appreciation for the environment. And I thought that was really a beautiful way to sum up how, if we can get people really thinking about animals and trying to communicate with them and get back to perhaps some of a simpler life, that it really could make the world a better place.
Oh, that's so, you know, beautiful what you're saying, and I so agree. And it has been my life experience, and what I teach people in my workshops, in my classes, and I mean, I just nonstop. People ask where I live. I say I live on Delta Airlines because this is the crux of everything. You know, let me sum it up. John O'Donohue was a wonderful, wonderful writer, and something he said always resonates in my heart. He said, "Nearer to the earth's heart, deeper within its silence, animals know this world in a way we never will. We are distanced and distracted. And so when we tune back in through our hearts to the hearts and souls of animals, we awaken. And exactly as you're saying, we don't awaken to one particular animal. We awaken to all. You know, it doesn't stop at our own little, you know, relationship. It expands out because our hearts awaken and they're open in a way to the connectedness of all.
Yeah.
Of all.
I'm sure we all feel this, and I'm afraid to take it any deeper and establish a telepathic relationship with all animals because there's so much suffering in the animal world, and I am so empathetic towards animals. I don't want to think about it any more than I do. I work.
This is a problem. Let me address that because
okay.
This has been my life, and it's not. I don't preach, you know. I don't. But I'm telling you from my life experience because I worked for many years in the trenches. Now I was I came into this world an empath and a healer, and that's who I am and what I do. So my heart, and I talk about it in the book, was deeply, deeply broken. But as Rumi said, you know, that's the beginning of the story. It's in the ruin of heartbreak where we find the diamond of a passion that can resurrect the dead. So, and I see this all the time in animal activists, my people. They, exactly as you're saying, they become consumed by the pain of it all. But we follow that pain through when we break our hearts open, and we actually enter into our greatest courage and our greatest passion. And so we come through that stronger and more able to work through. And unfortunately, we're overloaded. You know, we don't need to watch every horrible video that we see. We don't need to do that.
Right.
I can't even do it.
Oh, yeah, it's difficult.
It's difficult. You know, we're not, I don't believe that we're hardwired to see all that violence. And we see it all the time, even with humans, you know, with the stuff going on with the headings and all that. No. You know, we don't need to watch that stuff, you know.
Yeah. And Linda, I think yours is a great message and one that you share through a nonprofit organization as well. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I have on my website, lindabender.org. There's a section there that talks about my nonprofit from the heart. And it's threefold. And one, because I've spent so much time with wildlife overseas, it's directed toward anti-poaching and helping wildlife because we're decimating them. And right here in the U.S., you know, the number one cause of death for healthy under 2-year-old dogs and cats is euthanasia. And we can do a whole lot better than that. So that's part of it. But the third part is education. And, you know, when we educate people, it changes everything. We educate people. Many people in China think that elephants don't die when they lose their tusks, that they're shed. So we need to work much better at education. And here in this country and in our food animal industry, we need to educate people to really what's going on in that industry. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we need to get out there and do the work because, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. once said, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?
We've been talking with Dr. Linda Bender, author of the book Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. We thank you so much for your time, Linda.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thanks.